This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and joining me remotely this morning is Roshan Kunnison. It is just gone past 6 a.m. and it's a Friday, 27th of November. Yeah, there's a bit of cheer for me. It's been a pretty long week. And today, for those who are like love shopping, it also happens to be Black Friday. So I don't know whether you've got this list, you know, that you want to cross off because you missed your opportunity on that double 11 day. Like, all retailers need an excuse, right? They just come up with some artificial kind of day to create more, to kind of create that retail frenzy. And I have to say, they're very clever at it. And people are, you know, everybody's like online, having a look, checking that list, putting it into their, you know, shopping basket, which we are going to be talking about in a moment, right, Roshan?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it, you know, 2020 has been a lot of things. One of the things that has happened is that boost in e-commerce that we've seen, and also the changing of the way that we've celebrated holidays, right? So for me, for instance, Deepavali was happened, I think, 2 weeks ago. See, time has also has become a different type of construct at this point. But yeah, so we'll talk about whether this is going to be a lasting change. And if you have some comments on that, let us know on Twitter. But also, later on, about 6:30, we're going to take a look at the international side of things. And we're taking a look at Ethiopia for a change here because of the conflict that's happening in that country, as well as a look at South Korea as more COVID-19 cases are they confirmed the most number of cases since March, very recently.
Yeah, and I'll be discussing how you can take something you know, a profession that you perhaps did and you didn't like, and turn it into something else that makes money for you, or something that you really enjoy, you know, so it's never a dead end wherever you go. But let us know what you think. As always, get in touch with us via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few minutes. But first, here's Patience by Tame Impala. This is The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was something I don't really have much of. Patience by Tame Impala. It has just gone past 6:07 in the morning. It's Friday, the 27th of November. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, joined by Roshan Kunnison today from a mysterious, discreet, undisclosed location far, far away from here, right, Roshan?
In a galaxy far, far away, Shaoning. Very far away, all the way in Putrajaya. But yeah, it's a lovely, cool morning, actually.
Yeah, but it's been like crazy raining, crazy rain almost every day. And the amazing thing is it like rains, stops, and then starts again, and then stops and starts again. So clearly, for some people, it's flooding season. And even here in Kuala Lumpur, we are facing flash floods, something that occurs every time around the year, November and December. And before we complain, Klang Valley folk, we really have to think about the people in the East Coast. I mean, they really suffer from this quite badly. But in the meantime, what's up, Roshan?
What's up? The sky, Shaoning. The sky. That's where the rain comes from. But, you know, right now we're taking a look at quite an interesting topic, actually. This was an article on CNBC Make It, one of my favorite websites, I think, at this point. The headline was how these writers basically failed and changed how these bankers miserably failed in their careers and changed into made it into a TV show, which is actually quite interesting. And it made me think about pivoting, right? It made me think about when is that time? Have you ever failed at something, but taken that experience and turned it into something successful or something more meaningful and something you're more passionate about? And I did quite a little bit relate to this because, you know, I studied banking and finance in university. But I was always very interested in media, which is why I started blogging. And then I started vlogging, which then led to my internship at BFM.
And then you never left.
And then I never left. This is always the story, right? It's like one led to the other. There was always a different plan above it all. But it kind of just fell into place. I mean, I was supposed to just learn how to write business content at BFM. I guess I never left.
Yeah, actually, I think life sometimes is kind of ironic, right? So maybe I'm like the opposite of you, Roshan. I did study business and finance, and I did do it for a good 20 years. And then, hey, I don't know what happened. Suddenly I'm at BFM, you know, and I'm coming up to my second year talking about business stories. But being a media person is a rather unusual experience for me. But I think the point about this is that, you know, what we are or what we become it's never really predetermined, right? It's never defined. And I think increasingly work, or how we see the nature of work, has evolved. Yeah, in the past, maybe when, you know, in the last, what, 20 years ago, you did a job and you stuck at it and you just continued doing the same thing for the, you know, until the end of your career, until you retire. But I think the nature of work has evolved. Companies are more accepting in terms of your background, right? They don't necessarily say, oh, if you've done this, you can only continue doing it again. Even in terms of degrees, when we talk about education, especially when I look at the type of people in BFM, we come from such a wide range of study. So let's say we have, of course, like me, finance, and you with finance, but we also have lots of people in the station who are like, who did psychology, media studies, there's a guy who did chemistry. And I think that organizations are richer for it. But you're right. You can take what you've learned, you can take your experience and pivot from it. It doesn't necessarily mean that if you studied to be a, you know, fund manager, that's the end of it, you know, for like, you're going to end up doing it for 30, 40 years. It's, of course, realistically not the easiest to change. But when that door opens, why not?
Yeah, you know, sometimes when you study something as well, right, there are skills that you learn studying that subject matter that you can apply to other things. Because I think I remember this point where a lot of engineers, or at least were joining the finance industry because of the structural thinking that came with it. But also, I have friends who studied engineering and just never did engineering after that. They went into media, they went into communications. And when I asked them why, they said that engineering taught them to be very structured in the way they think. And I, when I look back at the way I went, when I studied finance, I think it taught me very interesting to think about opportunity cost, to think about the different concepts when it comes to resource management. So there are different skill sets that you pick up beyond just the subject matter that you study, which can lend to different skill sets and different professions. And also, you know, that concept of profession, Xiaoning, when I grew up, which is the 90s, you always kept, there was still this idea of doctor, lawyer, architect.
Engineer, you forgot the engineer.
Engineer, sorry. Yeah, how, yeah. I should hand in my Indian card now. How could I forget engineer? Yeah. You know, but you know, those were the things that kept being hammered into it. Get a professional job and you'll be okay for life. And we know that's not necessarily the case anymore.
You can do that and you still won't be okay for life, unfortunately.
Yeah, right? I've got friends who studied medicine who are waiting for placements and, you know, it's not something they can do. But I have friends who studied other things, went into the startup ecosystem, who are maybe a bit more thriving, but of course that's a more risky long-term endeavor, right? It's not, it doesn't have the stability of an established profession or an established company.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, what you got to do is take the experience that you have, the education that you have, combine it together, right? And sometimes, yeah, you know, you're lucky you got the job that you like and then you thrive in it. But for some people, it doesn't work out. It's not something they enjoy. But for, I would like to say, it's never the end of the road. Even at my ripe old age of, I won't disclose on air, quite old, you can always pivot. You can always transition. And a famous one, of course, is this Wall Street writer, Michael Lewis. He was a bond trader and he absolutely hated it. And then he went on to write very famous books about his experience there. So why not? Think about it. You can always
Liar's Poker, right?
That was one of Liar's the books Poker. He wrote. Yeah,
Flash so, Boys.
Yeah, and he, why not? So at the end of the day, you open your eyes to new experiences, or, you know, it's possible. But let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have some messages and we'll come back very soon. And this is The Morning Run, BFM 89. BFM 89.9 is now 6:20 in the morning, and of course you're listening to The Morning Run with Roshan Kanisan. Today, of course, for America, they're celebrating Thanksgiving Day. And even here in Malaysia, I think despite everything, despite COVID-19, we still have a lot to be grateful for, to be thankful for. But it's kind of nice that they set aside one day to celebrate that in the US. But ironically, like the following day, it's Shopping Frenzy Day in the US, isn't it? So we have this interesting story from the New York Times about Black Friday. Or in a way, maybe it's more than that, because it's also the death of traditional brick and mortar retail trade that we know of.
Yeah, I mean, the story is quite, adds a lot of color to the situation, right? And what it does is it's basically trying to tell us how the holidays in the US have changed. And I think we can relate to that, because if you look at Deepawali, which happened a few weeks back, it wasn't as, well, festive as it used to be, right? So a lot of things were done online. You know, I got my muruku by WhatsApping someone and then it was sent over to the house, which I hope people at the office ate, because I know I left one jar there for you guys.
We are almost finished with that. And by the way, doesn't mean that you don't have to stop.
All right, noted.
Please
with
continue.
Thanks.
Please continue.
Yeah, but you know, it's a lot of things have changed because we're trying to keep a physical distance apart. And then I'm sure if you went to Brickfields or the Indian restaurants, it was not as vibrant and festive. And we're going into another holiday season here in Malaysia, which is Christmas, right? And Christmas is typically a massive retail event. And we're not going, and a lot of our shops, we're in a CMCO, a lot of shops aren't open. It's not the same feel when you go to the malls because, you know, people are staying at home. I guess the question here is whether this will last, whether any of these habits will keep in, but also how have the holidays changed for us individually, right? Because I know for Deepavali, it was a bit more of a logistical hurdle because you had to keep within 20 people at home. You had to keep an eye on how many people were in the house. And you also had to pick and choose your friends and family, which not the best feeling in the world.
Yeah, I think, but if anything, we talked about this constantly throughout the year, right? How COVID-19 has changed that in terms of what has becoming more important. And I think there's no denying a lot for me, you know, when it comes to festivals, be it Christmas or Chinese New Year, it almost becomes very, very commercial, right? It's all about buying the latest thing, making sure you buy all these cookies, or buying clothes. And I think we need to move away from that conversation and move away from that practice or the behavior and to really focus on what it means that festival. And a lot of it is just spending time with family, which unfortunately in this COVID-19 era has become a bit of a challenge, especially with now this CMCO, because we're told not to celebrate big festivals. So you can probably do it with your immediate family, that three or four people, but of course it just doesn't feel the same, right? So nonetheless, I think the people feeling the brunt of this are the retailers nonetheless.
Yeah, and honestly, when you take a look at that, that's the big part of it, right, Shaolin? Because you probably have family in other states who can't come here. And these are the kind of milestone events that we have throughout the year. Now, I'm not trying to be sounding like all somber, but it is the reality of the year. And, you know, coincidentally, we are in the last week of the 11th month of the year, Shaolin. Next month is the last month of 2020. Let's hope when we go into 2021, it starts off on a much better foot. But at the same time, I think there needs to be an expectation that having zero cases is not realistic. I think that's something that we spoke to Tan Sri Jamila, who's an advisor to the Prime Minister on Health, just a few days ago on this. And this is kind of the new reality we have to deal with and how we work around it, right? So again, it may require more planning. It may require more logistical prowess, but it can be done, I think. But I guess it's just the switching of expectations, right? In the more financial term, we have to re-rate how we think about holidays as well for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, even recently we saw a resurgence of cases in Hong Kong and then the similarly in South Korea. And it's the same case in Singapore, which wanted to start this travel bubble with Hong Kong. So this race to flatten the pandemic curve is one that just never will stop, you know. And I think even if we are lucky and, you know, we pray that the vaccine is available by this, let's say the second quarter, it will really take a while before all of us gets the country gets a certain level of herd immunity. And even then, it doesn't really work that way because there are other countries that perhaps don't, and we're not really sure the efficacy of each vaccine, how long it will last. So nonetheless, I think life has changed for us tremendously. And it also, of course, has changed for retailers because, you know, when we talk about how we spend or how we shop, I think there's no denying. I think everybody's now going to be on this omni-channel, right? It's going to be a combination of online and a very nice brick and mortar. For some people, it's just completely online.
Yeah, and you know, end of the day, when we talk about the CMCO and the protocols and living with non-zero cases, it's all about making sure the curve is flat enough so that the healthcare services can cope with it, right? Because that's also why we started at the beginning. And sometimes I think we feel like, oh, we can get to zero and maintain the zero. It's not realistic. But if we follow the SOPs and maintain certain protocols, we can prevent the community spread, which is more that danger that we don't want, right? If it's a contained spread, like what we've seen with the top glove situation, we can still operate in other sectors of society and, you know, just clamp down those particular parts and then restore things.
Yeah, because we also don't want to crush the economy, which is nonetheless still very fragile. But let us know what you think about our conversation earlier. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is The Thorn in My Side by Eurythmics. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. This is Xiaoning and I'm here with Roshan Kunnison on The Morning Run. And it's just gone past 6:39 in the morning. And that song was Islands by the XX, which unfortunately for a lot of us, that's not where we can be for the moment because of the CMCO. But I think all of us have a bit of cabin fever and wouldn't mind a little bit of chuti chuti. But in the meantime, one country is celebrating a holiday, and of course that is the United States, because yesterday was Thanksgiving for them. And like for the rest of the world, they too had a very subdued affair, more than usual. So experts and health authorities appealed to the public in the weeks leading up to Thanksgiving to forego gatherings and travel to reduce the spread of COVID-19.
Some of these experts include Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's been a big name this year when it comes to America's effort to combat the infection, even to the dismay of their president at some times. So he's the nation's top infectious disease expert and warned that that travel basically raises the possibility of a surge, in quotes here, surge superimposed on a surge. That sounds really scary and sounds serious, but it seems like not many people are taking him seriously, and that a wave of deaths could come as Christmas arrives. So this is on the back of the massive amount of cases we're seeing in the US over the last few weeks. So it surged back the levels. It's a bit concerning over how there's no real containment method. And if you remember our call with our analyst yesterday, Xiaoning, Tony Nash, he was talking about how a lot of Americans were fed up with how local and state counts, state governments were imposing different measures of lockdowns because it was impacting the economy.
Yeah.
So you have that, and you have from the executive branch for the most part of the year, this narrative of we don't need this or lack of direction, which has led to this, right? It has led to this even more disparity of opinion when it comes to the American public, who are very, at odds with each other over what is right when it comes to the pandemic and the management of it.
Yeah, I think the messaging in the US from the beginning was confusing, so it doesn't really help. Plus, the reality is that I think all of us feel it, which is, of course, lockdown fatigue. I mean, it's a real thing. I mean, nobody wants to do it, but unfortunately, it's a necessity if you want to flatten the curve, right? So, fortunately, according to this poll, as many as 61% of respondents decided to limit gatherings and avoid travel in the US. But still, this is what's worrying. A significant minority have defied the advice. So The Guardian has reported that the US airports saw around 900,000 to 1 million people a day pass through checkpoints from Friday to Tuesday. Now, this is still down 60% from last year, but still some of the biggest crowds seen since the pandemic took hold. So new cases in the US continue to rise. And on Wednesday, the number of hospitalizations hit a record for the 16-day in succession, reaching 90,000. 2,300 deaths were also reported on Wednesday, the largest single-day rise since May. And if I'm not wrong, at the top of my head, daily cases in the US are above 160,000. That's really shocking. I mean, this is the daily cases. Even in Malaysia, our number is above 50,000 for the entire duration. And even then, I'm thinking, that's a lot. How can we reduce this number going forward?
Yeah, and again, that concern again comes back to community spread, right? Because if the cases are contained within a certain populace, that's one thing. But if that goes into the community, it's very hard to, and especially in the US, because you don't really have a central contact tracing strategy, it becomes even more complicated to manage. And 260,000 hospitalizations is nothing to joke around about, even for a country the size of the US, because, I mean, they don't exactly have the best healthcare in the world. And that's the concern, right? Because the implications going forward for the population, whichever country is facing this this concern, is the impact on the healthcare sector, as we've mentioned, and the effort to flatten the curve, but also the people who are at risk and vulnerable who are impacted by this.
Yeah, but even countries, and this is the sad point to note, even countries who have a very, disciplined society and have been able to flatten the curve, they've suddenly seen a resurgence. And this is the case of South Korea, because they've reported almost 600 new cases of COVID-19. And this is the highest in more than 8 months. So the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency said that there are sporadic cluster infections across the country from private gatherings, public facilities, hospitals and militaries. These were the reasons behind the new cases. So So, you know, even a dozen of enlisted soldiers tested positive for COVID-19 at a military facility. So once again, you know, once you have a lot of people together, staying together in close confines, there's always this possibility of the COVID-19 cases rising. So clearly, the race to flatten the pandemic curve is far from over. But let us know what you think. You know, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 on how we should flatten this pandemic curve. What should we do, especially during this holiday season? Tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after some messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Xiaoning with Roshan Kanasan, and of course, this is The Morning Run. And that was The Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams, and it is currently 6:50 in the morning. It's a Friday, the 27th of November. And now we're taking a look at some of the local stories that are in our headlines. First off, what do we have, Roshan?
Well, of course, all the news is around what happened yesterday in Parliament, right? And a lot of commentary coming out because of the, I think they were, the Speaker asked for, when they were talking about budget, the Speaker had asked for a voice vote to take it to the next stage, which is the committee stage, I think. And when there was an ask for a block vote to basically stop it from going to the next stage, which you need a minimum of 15 people in Parliament to stand up, only 13 did. And keep in mind that we're talking about the whole Parliament, the whole of Parliament here. And a lot of the opposition members didn't stand up. And this included a lot of, most of the members from PKR. The people who did stand up included Tun Mahathir and his Pejuang allies and friends, as well as a few members from Amanah. And the first story I have here is Khalid Samad explaining what happened. And according to him, he's saying that Amanah standing up is not a reflection of basically a breaking up of Pakatan Harapan. What it was is that they didn't have time to plan this out, right? So that this was such a surprise that they were caught off guard. But Anwar Ibrahim, Dr. Sri Anwar Ibrahim, in another article here says that they wanted it to pass the policy stage, and that it's the third stage here, these committee stage here, that matters. And that's when you see them really get their voices heard. But, you know, a lot of confusion yesterday, Xiaoning, and a lot of, I think, some disappointment towards the opposition.
Yeah, I think if you went into the Twitter sphere almost immediately, right?
Oh, yeah.
You could even see a lot of the younger DAP members, not necessarily the MPs, but the Aduns, asking what's happening, why did it go through, you know, and wanting some explanation for it. Because I think this was rather unexpected that they didn't voice their opposition or their displeasure at the budget. But I want to go back a little bit before the voice vote was counted. And that was because our finance minister, Tunku Zafro, he did give some concessions, I would say, or changed some of the details of the budget. One of which is that he is now going to allow the widening of the EPF withdrawal. So now you can withdraw up to 10,000, and it doesn't matter if you're from members of the formal sector or self-employed, active contributor members or otherwise. As long as your income has been greatly affected, you can withdraw from account one savings. So under the previous iSINA facility, only 2 million members qualified, but now apparently it has been extended to more than 8 million members. So previously you could withdraw 9,000, but now you can withdraw 10,000. Now, we've had many conversations on this show about the wisdom of this, you know, because there is always question marks about whether Malaysians have enough for retirement. And we just had a conversation yesterday with Lawrence Todd, you know, from Ideas, saying that Malaysia is almost ill-prepared for this era of, or this period where there's going to be a large rise in our aging population and there's not enough retirement funds. So, yeah, I think, you know, we also featured Tunku Ali Zakri on the show. You know, we went to his press conference where he, you know, voiced concern about the withdrawals and what impact it might have on EPF's ability to manage funds and also generate future returns for its members, because there'll be opportunity cost loss there. But, you know, so this widening net, I would really like to know the details, you know, and it does impact all Malaysians who contribute to EPF. But there were also other measures, one of which is that there was an automatic moratorium extended to those who applied for loans. You know, so those under B40 and the M40, if you would apply or you did apply, it would be automatically granted to you. But apparently, in terms of the impact to the banks, it's going to be minimal.
Yeah. If we move, and of course, Dun Mahathir had quite a scathing commentary, let's just put it that way, on this, saying that basically this shows, or at least the impression here is that it shows that the opposition backs the government overall. But we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. One of the other interesting stories I have here. Sorry, Shaning, you
wanted to
do it?
No, I wanted to say that we'll be having many commentators today regarding this,
yes,
right?
Yes, we will.
Yeah, so it's not the end of our budget discussion. We will have Syed Saddiq later on at 7:45. Of course, we are going to ask him about National Service. But since he was in the August House, that was something that we are also going to ask him why he, I think apparently he didn't stand up and why did he agree to the budget at this moment.
Yeah, and then of course at 8:30 we're taking a look at it with a political commentator, so to kind of see the power play happening, what's the strategy behind this, so stick around with us throughout the show if you want to learn more, and you know, just keep track with all of this. But you know, just moving away from this for a second here, I've got an interesting story here based on the, you know, I think we recently recently saw the grace period for the Workers Housing Act come to an end, and MEF though is still asking for more time for the employers, I think, to fully come in line with all of these rules and regulations that will be fully enforced by the Human Resources Ministry today. So that's going to be something, from yesterday. So that's going to be something to pay attention to, especially if you're an employer.
Yeah. But that's all from the papers we have this morning. Coming up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, especially on the budget. We will be speaking to Han Tan, market analyst at FXTM, that was a bit of alphabet soup, to find out where global markets are heading. But first, here's Fung Factory by Rolls Royce. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.